Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinkney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinkney. I tell you, we had quite a week this week. We had the Gerald Baker tribute, the Poor People Campaign, a national call for more revival, Wednesday, September the 6th. At Charles H. Wright Museum of Art, American History. Gerald Baker was someone special. He was way ahead of his time. He was a true leader. And I tell you, he stood for something. He stood for people, the poor people. But what I want to talk about Martin Luther King just a little bit. Dr. King did it. The Poor People Campaign of 1968, just a year before his assassination, at a Southern Christian Leadership Conference staff retreat in May of 1967, Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. proclaimed, "I think it is necessary for us to realize that we have moved from the era of civil rights to the era of human rights. When we see that there must be a radical redistribution of economic and political power, then we see that for the last 12 years we have been in a reform movement. That after Selma and the Voting Rights Bill, we moved into a new era, which must be an era of revolution. In short, we must have moved into an era where we are called upon to raise certain basic questions about this whole society." Yes, this whole society. Later that year, in December 1967, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King announced a plan to bring together poor people from across the country for a new march on Washington. This march was to demand better jobs, better home, better education, better lives than the one they were living. He was talking more about more issues. He was talking about more issues here. And that's what this country lacked. In his last Sunday sermon, Reverend Martin Luther King stated, "There can be no gainsaying of the fact that a great revolution is taking place in the world today. In a sense, it is a triple revolution, the logical revolution with the impact of automation and cybernation. Then there is the revolution of weaponry with the emergence of the atomic and nuclear weapons of warfare. Then there is a human right revolution with the freedom explosion that is taking place all over the world. Yes, we do live in a period where changes are taking place. There is still the voice crying, the vista of time saying, 'Behold, I make all things new. Former things are passed away.' Now, whenever anything new comes into history, it brings with it new challenges and new opportunities. We are coming to Washington." This is what Martin Luther King said. "Tired, the poor, the huddled mass, we are coming to demand that the government address itself to the problems of poverty. We read one day we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are liberty, our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or income, he has neither life nor liberty, nor the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. We are coming to ask America to be true to the huge promissory note that is signed years ago. And we are coming to engage in dramatic, nonviolent action." This is Martin Luther King talking. "To call attention to the gulf between promise and fulfillment, to make the invisible visible. Martin Luther King changed his whole route. He started talking about the Poor People Campaign to get more people involved. When you think about Martin Luther King, I must confess, he was one very important person in our history. People can say whatever they want about him. People begin to hate him until he died. But he stood for something. He stood for something. And I love him. I love what he has done. I love what how he handles himself. I love everything about him. See, one in two people living in the United States are poor today or low income. 43% of the United States children live in families that are struggling to feed, clothe, and house them. 28 million people without health insurance. 65 million workers who get paid too little to sustain themselves and their families. 14 million, one in nine United States households are vacant. Yet 3.5 million people experience homelessness each year. 39% of them are children, and we say nothing. We say nothing. Here in Benton Harbor, Michigan, you got 80% of the people living below the poverty level. Homelessness. We got it all right here. And nobody's saying a mumbling word. It's time that the people stand up. It's time that the people say no more. We are fighting for our lives. God is not happy with this country. We got tornadoes, we got whirlwinds, we got hurricanes, we got it all coming. And God is not through with this nation. He is sick and tired of the way this nation has treated the rest of the world, and especially black people. Even the attack on Mexicans right now, you see, it's all planned out. The problem is we have to say no more. Until we say no more, it's going to continue just this way. We got a justice system with no justice. We got a government that is experimenting on everybody they can. And there's nothing you can really do about it unless you come together. They have all the resources. They're using your money. They're using your money to experiment on you. And there's not a whole lot you can say. We're so divided. The power is within the people. You know, a lot of times we run fast, but we don't run long to learn to stand up for the future of our children. It's about our children. Until we learn to do that, it's going to continue just this way. I'm excited today. I'm going to have my good friend Robert McKay out of Chicago. He will be talking about the book, The Choice, which is I have not completed the reading the book, but it's been something that it definitely has my attention. It talks about the issues of black survival in America. And we are going to have to do some things. Until we do some things, it's going to be tough. We are going to have to stand together, fight together, and make sure that we get things done. Let me bring in my good friend from Chicago itself, Robert McKay. Robert McKay, are you there?
I'm here, Rip Pigney. How are you, sir?
Hi, I'm great. Are you still on the highway, or where are you?
I'm on the highway, but I'm good. I can talk.
You good? You okay? Can you multitask like fast? Cause I tell you this. I don't want to see you driving into the car in front of you.
I do that daily. I multitask. It's a 24-hour, like you say, stick and move.
Stick and move. Get stick and move. Stick and move.
Stick and move.
And Robert, that's right. That's right. We want to talk a little bit about the book of choice. I'm reading it right now, and I want to tell you, I really like the book. I'm just into it. I'm just getting into it, but I'm excited. You know, I'm excited to be in it, and I'm excited to read it. And there's some things in here that's really got my attention. And then, you know, I'm gonna read this one on page 58. It says perhaps the most powerful institution the OEO has effected, that of the business world. When the war on poverty began, among our loudest critics were the United States Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, and countless private corporations. They saw it as another tax-consuming welfare-type program, one that the Democrat bragged about and the Republican paid for. Worse, they saw it as an attack on free enterprise and self-reliance. But then something happened last year when it looked doubtful that the Economic Opportunity Act would get through. Congress, some of our strongest defenders turned out to be the Chamber of Commerce, the NAM, people like Tex Thornton, Lincoln, and Thomas Watson of IBM and Henry Ford. The reason for this turnabout was clear. The business world took a closer look at the war on poverty. They saw it was basically conservative in outlook. It was relatively inexpensive and was ran locally, and program was based on self-reliance, a virtue long espoused by this segment of American society. Most of all, the business world saw that it was to its own economic interest to end poverty in America. Wow. They saying that the war on poverty, that, you know, which it, if I read further, it would tell you that the war on poverty was really a different type of war. It wasn't really a war on poverty. But tell me some of the stuff that you have read inside the book. It's such a tremendous book, and I think everybody should read it. Even the author, you know who the author is, don't you?
Samuel Yet.
Yeah, Samuel Yet. That's who it is.
Samuel
and,
F. Yet, right.
And I think that just by me reading part of it, they was talking about programs that they had that was designed to help end poverty, but it was the money was redirected to the corporations, and everybody got rich. And the poor got poor, according to them. But it's deeper than that. I haven't got to the main part when you talk about the Kerner Report and stuff like that. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that for me.
Well, Rempig, you know, in the year that Samuel Yet wrote that statement, segment in his book, that was back in the 60s. And
yes,
he was coming out of the 60s into the 70s. And you would think that that was written for today because we have so much poverty. You outlined what the people are going through. And Samuel Yet, and his title of his book comes straight out of the Kerner Commission report because it tells you, they summarize it by saying that when in the 60s, mid-60s, when the riots were going on across the country, tearing these cities up, President Johnson was under the impression that the communists were behind it. So he assembled this task headed by Governor Otto Kerner out of Illinois to go out and do some fact-finding and come back with a report because he wanted to get to the bottom of it. But they came back and said, the problem is not the black community. I'm summarizing now. It's the white community. So we created these problems. Saying we have a choice. And you can either help them come out of the crisis or the problems that we created, or get rid of them. And Samuel Yeh's position in his book was that they chose the latter, and he states that. And when you see how the government, and you talk about the way they've analyzed this whole process, the Kerner Commission report, the plight that the people are in, the workers, they've decided that we're going to eliminate so many people off the face of the earth because we don't need them. You know, they said that the earth can withstand or survive with only 500 million people on it. You know, we can eliminate up to this point now, I believe, about 4 to 5 billion people, and they won't miss them because everything is being automated. You have computerized systems. You have automated. The auto industry up in Detroit, which was a mecca for jobs for people coming and build automobiles. And those have been outsourced. They've been taken around the world now. The Chevrolet, their new car, is made in Australia. The Chinese are building Buicks. You have the Ford industry up in Canada. So these jobs that were people flocked to Detroit. Detroit is a ghost town now. You for me, you go up there often to speak. But
yeah.
That industry is dead. Because, you know, they brought the idea to the unions in the late 60s and early 70s that they wanted to mechanize and robotize the auto industry where the machines were building cars. They needed the people to do it anymore. And so the unions backed off and said they would not agree with it. So the auto industry left this country. And I believe that the only ones left now in Detroit are Chrysler, but they've been using foreign parts to assemble their vehicles. But the
what?
Choice, back to the choice with Samuel Yeh, he outlined strategically what the government plans were for the people, especially in the black community. Because out of all the communities here, groups here, this is the only group who are not migrants, immigrants, settlers, refugees, or aliens. And the purpose of bringing, and I don't have to go through and repeating history, but many of us don't know the history. These young people don't know the history. Our people were brought here to do one of two things, pick cotton or tobacco. And once that has been accomplished, now it's mechanized and no longer needed. And there's a second book written, not by Samuel Yeh, but by Sidney Wilhelm. He outlines and details in his book, Who Needs the Negro? And points out in 1619 that the tobacco prices were dropping, and they needed cheap labor to do it, to pick the tobacco. So that's where that idea came in, and they started transporting people here. And over those years, over 36,000 ships, shiploads of black bodies came in along with other cargo to subsidize the farming system here where it was free labor. This is something that the country was built on the backs of our people, but everyone else is enjoying it. I mean, with the natives who came, when they came here, the natives helped them, assisted them in fertilizing the ground. And trained them, taught them how to be agriculturalists. Now, they've taken that over, and the natives are gone. Except they place them in the treaties on certain reservations, and those treaties are being broken today. I mean, the Civil Rights Act that was signed in 1964 Samuel Yeh points that out. The Civil Rights Act in 1964 signed. It recognized two federally protected classes, blacks of African descent and Native Americans. Other groups coming in here realized the value of it, and the certain people in the government realized how they could upset the apple cart. So they made this group minorities, which blacks of African descent are not minorities, but we identify ourselves as such, so we belittle ourselves by taking our identification into that realm. And when all the minorities come to the table, get a slice of the pie, and they get there first, we get nothing because we sit back and wait. You know, it says in the scriptures that faith without works is, you know the rest.
Yeah.
But
yeah, absolutely.
Right. But
absolutely.
But Samuel yet had a great insight on what the system was doing. And, you know, when Nixon, right, he got hold of the book, or he was informed of that book, and he attempted to get the book off the shelves, but it was too late. They were on college campuses all across the country. And
mm-hmm.
he went to Newsweek, the medium that Samuel Yet worked for in Washington, D.C. He was the only black reporter working with Newsweek, and they had access to the
mm-hmm.
White House. And he told them to get rid of Samuel Yet, or you lose access
mm-hmm.
to the White House. They went to Samuel Yet
yeah.
and told him that you have to go. You know, the president doesn't want you here. He refused. They fired
mm-hmm.
him. And he
yep.
ended up suing Newsweek, and he won his case. But, yeah, this is what we see in that book, The Choice. And it's history now. But it was a forewarning,
yep.
which many of us have not taken the heed. There should have been preparation. We're in a disaster that we have not been prepared for. You talk about disaster preparedness, we're in it. We're in the midst of it. You know, a few people are doing good. They give these elected officials, they give athletes, you know, enormous salaries. The politicians
mm-hmm.
get great benefits. So they're happy. They'll tell everybody else.
Not to take it back to the community.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You don't live on the south side of Chicago. You don't live up in Roxbury in Boston. You know, you live out here in the suburbs where it's glowing. You can find you a nice woman who is better than the one that you have normally had access to. And they split the families up. You know, I always say we have lost one of our most valuable human resources, our elders, our grandparents. They have them housed away in senior villages, senior complexes, senior this and senior that, you know, giving you the impression that this is better, that you're better off. But in the long run, the families are losing because we don't have wisdom and training and understanding passed down through the ages. And that's why you see these young people on the streets today would have no respect for themselves or their elders or having any respect for their culture. So Samuel Yet's book was a forewarning, which there may be some salvation. And his is not the only book. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, I understand the scriptures. It's spelled out in the Holy Spirit in the Bible who we are. And, We don't take understanding to that. You know, it tells you in the Genesis 15 chapter, I believe it's 13th verse, that Abram was told that your people will be taken into a strange land. For over 400 years, you will be captured and taken out.
Yeah.
And the entire book of Deuteronomy, the 28th chapter,
mm-hmm.
speaks to
what
we are living today. Right, you know it well.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
again, Samuel Yet, that's current events. And we're living in current events now. And he wrote a great piece in the Choice on the current events. But you couple that with the Kerner Commission report. They admitted that what was going on and what is going on is not the people's problem. You know, Nixon in 1971 decided that, and I'm not sure he made that decision based on the Choice, Samuel Yet's book, but he said, we're going to dump the guns and the drug and the black community and watch it disintegrate. And that's what we have going on now. He said, we're going to identify, and it's on his tapes. If you can get access to his audio tapes, because he taped everything in his office. He recorded this hours and hours of information. He was upset with the hippies. He said, we're going to associate the hippies with marijuana and heroin with the blacks. And that's what the war on drugs. They created that. All this, these systems and cultures are generated now. You know, they create fads, and the people fall into it. Well, everything you see now, it comes across the television screen or a movie screen. It generates fads. You know, we get locked into that. We have people who, when they say when a culture is preoccupied with fads, it's on a decline, and that's basically what we're in a decline right now. You know, there's hope as long as we have breath, and we have the Reverend Pinckney's. We can get two or three more of you, and there would be great hope. But it's an uphill battle as we see it now. But go ahead, sir.
You know what? We need them now. We need about 1,000 more because I tell you, you know, we need something to wake the people up, and like I said, with all the hurricanes that coming across this country, God is not pleased with this country. Matter of fact, for years they did whatever they wanted to do, and I have never known a hurricane to come back to back like it is now, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, and a lot of people they need to read that the book The Choice. They need to read that book so they can understand. I mean, I'm just start reading it right now, and I'm excited. You know, it's a very very good book, and what you were saying about automation too. Because General Motors and all these other places, it used to take 50 people to make one car. Now you can make 50 cars with one person. You know,
that's right.
So it's
right.
You know, so now things are at where they're at right now is something that people need to sit down and decide. You know, and here's another thing. They're professional at dividing people up. You see, it's always something somebody don't like. I don't like him because he's too tall. I don't like him because he's too short. I don't like her because she's too fat. I don't like her because she's too skinny. It's always something somebody like, she's too light, she's too dark, she's too white, she's too this. It's always something we don't like, and they like it, and they keep that going so that everybody can be so divided up so they cannot fight. You see, this, you know, one of the things that if we deal with just morals, you see that's a big word, moral, because if we deal with that, we will come together, stand together, fight together, and deal with this thing the way it's supposed to be. See, a lot of times people don't understand how these people do things. Like at midnight, they change the prices of the food that you receive. The cost, you go to Walmart, if you go there at 11:58 is one price, you get there 12:01, the price has changed. And then here's another thing they do. Like you go and buying a pint of ice cream, and somehow half a gallon, which is not a half a gallon no more. It gives you one pint and certain amount of ounces, and in a container, washing powder, same stuff. These people got all kind of tricks, and we won't learn, Robert. We won't learn that you know what these people are doing is wrong. We rather fight each other than fight the real enemy. And that's why they're getting away with all this stuff. I am shocked that, you know, that people haven't got smart enough to understand how important it is to stand up and fight for what's right and fight for the future of your children. It's crucial that we do this. But we have failed, Robert. We got to do better. These people out here got to go out here and start doing things better and standing up for what's right and doing what needs to be done. And I tell you, Robert, you know, and I appreciate you, Robert, because I know when I was locked up, I know you went beyond the call of duty, and now you're trying to help Robert Thompson and get this thing right. But, you know, it's an uphill battle, but it is not something that we cannot do. That's the most important thing, Robert. It's not something that we can't do. When we learn to come together, fight together, stand together and realize it's more of us than them, then we can win this battle. We can't win this battle until we understand it's more of us than them, you know. And that's that over, you know. And here's the thing: you got some good white folks, man, and you got some bad ones, you know. Just like you got good black folks and bad black folks, you know, Mexican bad, and good ones too. But the point is, we got to pull people together. If we don't do that, brother, we ain't doing nothing out here. The last thing I want to talk to you about: you talked about that Kern report. How they weigh in? How many? That's supposed to about how many pages is that?
I'd say somewhere around 600 pages. I can't get to mine, but I know it's a nice, it's good reading, and it gives you an understanding. But they it was presented to President Johnson, and all the facts were there, he ignored it. I mean, they mothballed it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they live by that, if the our elected officials coming from the community, mm-hmm. in these political forums when they're running for office, that's one of the main questions that should be put to them. Have you read and understand the Kerner Commission report? And if you you don't understand that, then you don't need to talk to our community about representing, because that we would consider this a major factor in representing our community. If you can tell us what you think and what you feel and how this Kerner Commission report should be implemented and how it could be utilized to liberate the people who are in turmoil right now.
Absolutely.
So, unless they can show us that and give us some understanding on that specific Kerner Commission report, and they need to study that. And these young people now who are running for office don't know history, and it is said that when you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. And right now,
That's currently right.
We're repeating history. Again, a few are given the choice positions, given luxury, so that they can go back and say that we represent these communities out here, so therefore we don't have a fight. There's no problem. There are no issues out here to complain about. Everything, I'm living fine, so hey, everything is fine. You know, you talk about the people standing up. Especially our community has been dumbed down. At one point, it was illegal to learn how to read, and that was a crime.
Yeah.
And you could have your eyes put out, hands cut off, or hung or lynched if you were caught reading. So our people had to had to sneak around to learn how to read, and many of them got caught up in just reading one issue, one thing, the Bible. And it helped many people.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time,
absolutely.
Because there's been a crime, these other cultures were flourishing, progressing, developing. And we were staggered in a position where one or two people may have learned how to read or get educated. And for the most part, we were kept suppressed. And the suppression still... It's at the point now where we suppress ourselves with the kind of nonsense we take into our brains. But that's all part of the war.
Absolutely.
We don't understand that we're in a war. We're in a quiet war. That if the people realize what's going on, there would be a different story told today. But we don't understand that.
And you know what? I agree with you 100% on that. You know, we don't understand that. But, you know, one of the things, they don't teach that. See, one of the things I did while I was in prison, I taught them about history, our history, black history. I taught them how to do things and how to do things right and always based on a family foundation, which is, to me,
right.
is the most important thing. The family foundation, if you see, you can build from a foundation. You see, you can't build if the foundation is cracked. So you have to build from that foundation, and to me, that's important. But listen, I got I got 2 minutes for you now. I want you to tell me in 2 minutes whatever you want people that's listening, and you know, we have a tremendous audience today, and I can see people, you know, that actually is interested in what you have to say. I got a few comments and stuff like that, but we won't go into some of the good comments that they have stated. I want you to take 2 good minutes and tell us what people need to know. Can you do that, Father?
Well, no, the people need to know that right now, as I stated a few moments ago, we're in a war. The war is dumbing down our communities. I mean, we need to begin with the children, because it is known that prison cells are calculated by the time a child is in third grade. That's when they build them. They prepare this for when they become 17, 18, because now they charge a 15-year-old as an adult if they deem.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll go back as low as 13. So we're going to charge them as an adult. And that is the 13th Amendment. I always say that you were convicted with the 13th Amendment, because it states that that a person cannot be involuntarily detained unless they're convicted of a crime. So they created crimes. Reckless eyeballing was a crime. Vagrancy is a crime in our communities. So with all this, that they've turned these laws around. They've elected and appointed their minions in place to keep the system corrupt. And you mentioned earlier, I'll close on this, you talked about some good white people here. And we know that. I mean, that through history, in World War, when Lincoln was president, he had the Secretary of the Treasury, and he became a justice, a Supreme Court justice, and I think he was the governor of Ohio, Salmon P. Chase. He would purchase slaves in the South and take them north and let them tell them they're free. And let them, you know, give them their freedom. And they realize, you know, we know about John Brown. We read the history on many of the good people. But these are people who are unsung heroes in this country who have been here and fighting for us, that we need to educate ourselves and get down to history and getting an understanding of where we need to go. Because it says when you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, Father. I want to thank you, and you did a tremendous good job. But we're gonna, you know, by the time I read another 50 pages on this choice, I want you to come on again so we can talk a little bit more about this book, The Choice, because I think it's a book that people need to read. And we was trying to get it inside the prison system, but unfortunately they kept not allowing it in. Because I believe that you sent 6 books. To me, and all 6 of them they rejected, and they
right.
always had a different reason why they was rejecting the book. And to me, it's important. It's important that we know that we understand what we have against. See, the number one thing, we have to understand who the enemy is. See, a lot of times we don't understand. We believe it's each other. You're not my enemy, and I'm not your enemy. Unless
that's right.
You're working with the establishment, because I believe that what we're doing now is that we're finally beginning to come together and see things a little bit different, and I believe that things are going to blossom into something wonderful. And you know, a lot of times I always talk about my target individuals who I love dearly, and they have to come together, stop criticizing each other, and do better. Because I'm going to have my good friend Elisa on next and see what she has to say, because she may have something important that she wants to say and stuff like that. But Robert, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time out. I know you're on the highway, and I want you to, you know, drive safely and get back home, and let's talk soon.
We'll talk soon, Ram. Thank you for having me on, and I'll continue to listen.
All right, then, my brother. Talk to you later. Yeah, he's one of the true soldiers that exists today, that, you know, that we talk about. He's a soldier, a real soldier, a warrior. and he can do all these things. Let me bring in Alisa. Alisa, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm holding on over here. it's hard. It's very hard. But I wanted to thank the gentleman that was on earlier, because I want to basically say the same thing. We don't realize that we are at war. And what's happening now is they have these weapons now that they're going to use on more people. This is going to be a normal thing that's going to happen. So that's why I want people to listen to targeted individuals and come out and try to help and support us. Because what we need is a public outcry. We need a public outcry, and that's why I'm trying to invite people to the city where I live in. I'm currently living in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I need people to come out October the 10th at 7 a.m. and meet me in Center City, Philadelphia at the FBI building from 7 to 5. And we will basically just, we're going to have a peaceful protest, and we're going to discuss about the human rights violation. We want to talk about the Constitution. We'll be talking about other target individuals. We're going to be discussing the gang stalking and the electromagnetic weapons that are used on us, and all the implants that were, covertly put into us. So people don't realize how serious this is. So I just want people, if they can support me and go to my GoFundMe page, it's under Victim of Surveillance. They can also see me on Facebook, and just try to come out and at least learn, or just listen and learn and educate themselves and become aware of what's coming down and what's going to continue to happen. So that's my main thing, is to get people to understand this. This is really serious. These are real serious weapons. These are radiation weapons that they are allowed to use on any the public. They can use it on anybody at any time. So I just want people to be aware.
Alisa, let me say this too. See, people don't understand this stuff is real. See, a lot of times people don't do anything until something happens to them. When something happens to them, it's too late. You need to start. People need to start now. Understand? You could be next. It's me today and you tomorrow, whether you like it or not. I don't care who you are, who you think you're, white, black, red, pink, yellow, whatever color you want to be. You next. These folks, everybody is expendable to these people. They don't care about people. That's the last thing they care about. And you're using these people for experimentation and everything else, and getting away with it. Don't have to pay you a dime.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to give anything up to you. That's how they feel. But that's because it's the people. And until the people understand that it's more of us than them, that's the only time that we're gonna win this battle. I talked earlier, the 1% operate at midnight at Walmart. At midnight, if you can be buying a bag of potato chips at 11:58. If you don't get to that cash register by 12 midnight, you see that $2.98 bag of potato chips may become $3.10. I'm just using this as an example because I don't know how they raise it up. They raise it up 3-4 pennies at a time, sometime a nickel, sometime a dime. They do this and get away with it because people don't quite understand the process of big business, because they've been doing this for years. But the point is, if you haven't bought something, in a month or so, and the price is different, then you don't really, all you want is the chips. All you want what it is. We got to make sure that we got to hold these people accountable for their action and their inaction. Until we start holding them accountable, especially Walmart. Walmart can put out, it's good in a sense, and it's horrible for the community, whether we like it or not, because they put all the mom and pop stores out of business. That's what they do. And any time that you don't circulate money back into your community, your community will die. But one thing I will say to you, you keep your group together. And whatever it is, don't be arguing and bickering about stuff. Who this and who that. The thing is, you know, you got to build and you got to stay focused and you got to think about coming together. I know there's a Gloria in them also know you quite well, and I think that somehow you all got to connect. There's over a million targeted individuals, whether they like it or not. There's an email that I use to get from targeted individuals, but I think they keeping themselves together, and which is the number one thing that I talk about. You got to have unity, whether you like it or not. Unity, unity, unity. With unity, you can win. You cannot win without unity. Well, listen, you got about 2 minutes to say whatever your heart desires, and then I got to bring in Ravi Raz. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. I would like for people to educate themselves, and I'm trying to raise awareness, and I would like people, if they can get to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, October the 10th from 7 to 5, and support us with a public outcry to stop this hidden crime, to stop the government from experimenting on us and experimenting on anyone, women, men, children, at any time. And I do have a GoFundMe page. It's not about money. It's about doing what's right. We have to stop these crimes. We can't just keep on sitting here. If somebody would have told me about this, about targeting individuals and electronic weapons, I would have, went out my way to find a way to prevent it from happening to me. It won't happen if you're aware of what's going on and we come together, and like you said, in unity, and try to fight as hard as we can to stop it. But as long as it's hidden and it's a secret and people are not unified, that's why this will continue on. So if you can support me, I thank you.
And also tell them about when do you want them to come to the federal building?
Yes. Yes, it's at 6th and Market. If you Google the FBI building in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in Center City, you'll get the location. It's at 6th and Market. We'll be there from 7 a.m. to 5. We'll go to different locations. We're trying to get right in front of Fox 29 News, and we just want to tell our stories. It's going to be a peaceful protest. We're not gathered to cause any problems. We're just coming together to talk about this issue and try to get our politicians to do something and to stop ignoring this crime, and for the media to talk about this, you know, because there's a media blackout on this. And these crimes have been happening for years, for decades, they say. And we have to do something. We can't just allow the government to experiment on people and shoot people with weapons. I mean, we are shot with weapons every single day, everywhere we go. We're put on the street. We're blacklisted. We're watchlisted under surveillance, under fake terrorism laws. There's never been no terrorism. It's a scam. The terrorist is me and you. Anybody could be labeled as a terrorist and put on the blacklist. And they'll start shooting you with weapons. They'll stalk you. They'll destroy your finances. They'll destroy your life, separate you from your family. And taxpayers are paying for this. They mess
Absolutely.
With you. Every part
Absolutely.
Of your life. Every part of your life
Absolutely.
Is sabotaged and destroyed. Your children, everything. They don't stop. And these are American people torturing other American citizens. We have to stop taking the money and supporting this. We got to stop
Absolutely.
It.
Amen.
All right.
And we're going to keep spreading the word until people can get it through their thick heads. It's there, whether they like it or not. Let me bring in my good friend, Rozzy Roz. Rozzy Roz, are you there?
It's Rozzy Roz, and I'm here, Reverend Pinckney, and thank you. Always thank you for what you're doing for justice and speaking out against all these unconscionable acts across America, and to bring people together, which is so important. You just can't sit home. Our country is being taken over, and we're giving it away, and we're giving our people away, white, black, brown, whatever it is. We're giving everything away. We're destroying the students' education. We're destroying the justice system. Our money. And there's more of us than them.
That's right, Roz. And, Roz, here's something that's important that people don't realize. How important it is to stand together. They got the whole country divided. And, you know, maybe with these hurricanes, it might bring people together, but it's destruction. And what I'm seeing now is that, you know, God is not happy with this country. And we need to come together, all of us, black, white, red, yellow, blue, brown, whatever it is. Even I don't care what color you want to be. If you want to be a fake color, whatever color you is, whatever it is, we got to learn to stand together, stand up against these evil, wicked people, and learn to fight back. And you know, and I mentioned earlier about how they change the price of products. See, a lot of times people don't realize that until it's too late. When they're changing products, the price of the product, most times you don't even notice. They even change the weight. Now, this is something. The weight of the product, like we really don't notice that. It could be the same size box, but it'd be less product in that box. You know,
right. Look at toilet paper. You go in there and they have these specials, but you're not sure which is the deal, which is really the sale. It's so confusing. You end up just buying. Save your receipts and go back. For all of us hardcore shoppers, you go back and you get your sale price. And like the department store like Macy's, you know, they do that all the time. So you go back and get your sale price.
Yeah, and you know what? And absolutely, because we're living in a time now where the big brother takes advantage of the little brother here. And to me, I don't mind you making money because you started a company, but don't try to make all the money. See, you can't make all of it. We got too many poor people here in this country. You know, anytime you think about how poor people are, you know, and which is
right.
I could talk about Benton Harbor and the people here, the poverty level here, the unemployment level here, and the first thing they they don't want to work. Well, you can't work if there's no job. You know, and there's no job for them. They only hire certain people anyway. So that's really what it adds up to here in the city of Benton Harbor. These people are suffering. The people are
right, but
actually
we can't wait for a government. We have to do it. We have to educate our children with the basics so we can send them out. So you can send them out from Benton Harbor. We have to teach them how to read and write because they're not really teaching them in school. They're not giving them consequences, so they're just awful, like the boy who sprayed me. They didn't do anything to him. So we have to do it. It's up to us. We're not waiting for anybody. Just like I was a hostage in Iran, and our government, the American government, in 1978 said nothing was going on, and I didn't intend to die there, and I went and spoke to everybody. And the evacuation started, and I saved the lives of 40,000 people. So everybody has to start educating. Like Robert said, we need to know our history. When I went, and we were stationed all over, and I saw the statues, I knew that the South lost and the North won, and that stopped slavery. I knew that history. But they need to know what these statues mean. They don't even know what the statues mean. They're just tearing them down. That's the new thing. It was Russia. It's the statues. These are inanimate objects. We need to put all this energy into educating our children the right way. With manners,
absolutely.
With the ABCs, with the math. So they know. Yeah. We need to together, get off this other stuff. Who cares about these stupid statues? And help each other that are alive and living.
Well,
I don't know.
Some of these statues, mean different things to different people. And
I know that, and I'm sorry if they're offensive to you. I'm very sorry. They should really be taken somewhere so we all know the history. The history shouldn't be destroyed. We should know that these people were standing for slavery and what they really stood for, and how and who from the North sacrificed so the slaves could be free. That would be wonderful. Wouldn't that be good if there was a history museum and we all got to know the history? But I'm sorry for anybody that is offended by these statues. But it seems to take, you know, we've got our energy, I feel, in the wrong places. We need to get the energy for our children that are alive. So when our children bloom and they know how to do things, then they succeed. And they can't wait for the government. We have to help them. We have to help them like you nurture a garden. We have to nurture our children so they can just, so we get a better world. We get a better country.
Absolutely. And we got, there's so much that we need to do, and there's so much that we need to understand. And the fight is on, and people just need to realize. You know, one of the problems is, I know we're never going to get everybody to take a stand. People are, you know, some people are satisfied with the way things are right now. But unfortunately, their day is coming. It might be me today, but it could be you tomorrow. And people have to realize how important it is to take a stand. See, one of the things is if you are a Christian, you should be standing up for your neighbor. You see, a lot of times people have literally refused to stand up for your neighbor. You should be trying to protect your neighbor. If your neighbor is hungry, you should be hungry. That's the way it looks. Or unless you should feed your neighbor. If you don't feed your neighbor,
the most wonderful thing I ever did was to go downtown and feed the homeless, because it could happen to you. And everybody today should be cleaning out their closet to make a donation somewhere.
Absolutely. Everybody
giving
is doing
to go
something.
Through your canned goods. So you can't, you can only give one, so give one. You can only give 50 cents, give 50 cents. Can you imagine everybody coming together? It doesn't matter what you're giving. And you know God blesses you for that. And there's the verse in the Bible, 2 Chronicles 7:14. Like you said, that God isn't happy. We have everything going on. It says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land.
That's right.
Everybody should be reading that. 2 Chronicles 7:14.
Yes, they should, you know, and that is one of my favorite verses. And I love to hear. Okay. Well, anyway, listen, you got about 30 seconds to say what you want. We have ran out of time, but say something that you want people to know real fast.
Okay. You can't stand. This is the end. If you have Los Angeles Unified School District, that it's okay to kill off injured teachers. And if you have the governor of the state of California and his legislature making all these laws that purposely destroy the health and lives of injured people, this is it. If everybody sits around in their states and does nothing, this is the end. And I don't want
–
but when I talked about the statues, if they bothered you, I'm so sorry. But I just meant take this energy and devote it for people that are alive and healthy and doing things. And we need to
All right, Roz. I only got 30 seconds.
I'm sending out love.
All right. Listen, I will not be on the air next Sunday. I will not be on the air next Sunday. So those of you listening, I will not be on the air, but I will be on the air the following Sunday. I will be on the air the following Sunday. Next Sunday, I will not be on the air. So those of you who are listening, just remember next Sunday, no. The following Sunday, yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Everybody have a beautiful day. Talk to you soon.
Love you. Bye.